All right, all right. Hello, everybody. Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain. And we are out and about allowing the tiny little biplane vampires to feast on our flesh in the woods in Canada. Delightful. So, I hope you're doing well. I have some questions that need to be answered, or I've asked people to give me questions, and here they are. This is on my X account at x.com/Stefan Molyneux. All right. Would you be willing to review my novel formal abductive argument for the existence of God being the best explanation for moral absolutes? It begins with the ought of adhering to what is true and rejecting what is false as morally real, and fortifies a personal source. Well, here's the funny thing. First of all, if you're going to ask me, and this is a bit of a nag thing, this comes from when I was a hiring manager, chief technical officer, director of marketing, and so on, and I would get resumes with typos in them, and I would just toss them, because if you want someone to take a good look at something that you've done of great intellectual weight and moment, then don't have a typo in the message that you send. This is just a basic quality thing. If, you know, one of the most valuable attributes a person can bring to your life is you don't have to check their work. That is super important. If I have employees who wrote code for me, as I did for many years, if I don't need to double check their work, fantastic. Fantastic. If I have salespeople who work for me and I don't need to double check their proposals, fantastic. That's what you need. So the first thing that you want to do is not have an obvious typo. It's A-H-D-E-R-I-N-G, ordering. I think it's supposed to be adhering, but how am I supposed to believe that you have solved the problem of ethics relative to God if you can't even catch a typo in a message that you send, number one? Number two, I do call-in shows all the time. I do 3 call-in shows a week. Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Friday night, 7 p.m. Sundays, 10 a.m. And, of course, I love to talk about ethics. Ethics is the thing. I love UPB, University Preferable Behavior, my proof of secular ethics. I love talking philosophy. The call-in shows originally were supposed to be about philosophical topics. People wanted to talk about personal stuff, which is fine. But I adore talking abstractions, ethics, philosophy, and so on. So, would I be willing to review an argument? I have spent 21 years talking for 20 hours a week. You can also book a call-in show. Call-in shows are whatever you want to talk about. Could be to debate something. It could be about an intellectual argument, and so on, right? So asking me if I would be willing to talk to someone about philosophy is obviously a little confusing, because that's what I do. So this means somebody has not at all taken the time to figure out what I do and how often I talk to people and the approaches that I take and all of that. So if you can't be bothered to research anything that I do, and honestly, it's just go to my website. And if you follow me on X, I post all the time reminders about my call-in shows. I do spontaneous call-in shows. I do call-ins. So that means you haven't been to my website. You haven't checked on my work. You don't care anything about me, which is fine. I mean, it's not like you have to wake up and care everything about me. But if you don't care anything about me, then why would you care about my opinion on your theory of ethics. You know, this is another thing from when I was a manager and hiring people. I was chief technical officer and director of marketing. And what I would do is when someone came to interview, I would expect that they had gone to the website, learned a little bit about what we do. And I say this to you because I want you to have a good experience in the world. I want you to have a good experience in the world. Having a good experience in the world means getting to know people, even, you know, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. Ate a bug. 10, 20 minutes. Just find out a little bit about me, what I do, how you can contact me. And if you don't care about that, if you don't care to get to know me at all, if you don't care to know what it is that I do or how to contact me, again, that's totally fine. But then you don't really care about your system of ethics. And I'm just telling you how intelligent people view your efforts in this world. So if you really cared about your system of ethics, then it would matter to you to find out the best way to get in touch with me and not just type out a misspelled question on my X platform, said question of which could be answered with a few minutes on my website. On my website, it says right there, call-ins. You can call in about anything you want. So then you would just book a call-in. By the way, call.freedomain.com. That's call.freedomain.com. Have I come to an end here? It's been a while since I've been in these woods. Let us see. Ba-ba. Have we come to the end? Or does it continue? I think that is the end. My only friend, the end. All right, let's head back. Now, because everyone goes through a filtering mechanism in life, right? They go through a filtering mechanism and they say, it's beautiful out here. They say that too. So they go through a filtering mechanism, and what they do is they say, is this person serious about what it is that they want to do? And if you have genuinely proven ethics, look, I'm not saying you haven't, I'd be happy to hear the argument, but if you have genuinely proven ethics, that is the most valuable thing in the world. Honestly, like without a doubt, that is the most valuable thing in the world. If you have actually proven ethics, I mean, I believe I have proven ethics. I know I've proven ethics. So I pour mind, heart, body, and soul into getting the ideas and the arguments out there, because billions of lives hang in the balance of correct ethics in the world. So if you genuinely believe that you have solve the problem of ethics, then you wouldn't just send a badly typed message to me, which could be answered with a 2-minute view of my website, or just calling in. You'd set yourself a reminder and you'd say, oh, Steph does these call-in shows, so if I want to talk about my system of ethics, all I need to do is call into Steph's show. And we can chat about it, which, of course, I'd be thrilled to do. I am not lost, but I am not found in the woods here. There's some path back here, but I can't find it right now. All right. So it's sort of like if you believe you have an idea that genuinely will make $1 billion or something like that, you have some sort of business idea or some sort of idea, then I don't know how serious your argument is. I don't know how serious your business proposal is. The only way that I can judge the information that you're providing to me is not whether or not the idea, the argument, the business idea, the proof, I can't judge whether that is a good idea or an important idea or a valuable idea. I can't judge that because I don't know what it is. So the only way that I can judge the idea prior to evaluating the idea itself is to judge how seriously you take the idea. Do you see what I mean? That's all I can do. If you send to me, Steph, I got the best diet book on the planet. Not that I'm a nutritionist or anything, but let's say that was a value to me. I've got the best diet book on the planet. And you yourself are obese. I'm not going to read your diet book. Because if you have the best diet in the world and you're following your diet, then it's not the best diet in the world because you're obese. If you have the best diet in the world, but you yourself are not following that diet, then I know that you don't think it's the best diet in the world, or you don't think it's important. So, to get the attention of serious people in this world, you have to have empathy for my time, for the time of my audience, and so on. And you have to take things very, very seriously that you're doing. And if you just toss off a badly typed question, which could be answered in a minute or two on my website, or you could just call in to my shows, I post probably 10, 12 times a week about my call-in shows. So that means that you haven't listened to my show, you don't follow me on X, you're just typing a badly worded missive to me about whether I'm going to review your argument. And the answer to that is no, because time is short, and I wish to deal with people who take their ideas and arguments very seriously, because especially a proof of ethics is very serious. It's very serious business. So, also, knowing that I have a theory of ethics would seem to be quite important as well. Seeing how it might work with my proof of ethics. So, I'm not trying to be a nag. I'm really not. I'm genuinely trying to help you. As a serious person who's got a lot of stuff done in the world, this is not how a serious person gets anything done in the world. Like, I'm sorry about that. But I need to be frank with you. If you don't take your ideas seriously enough to do a tiny bit of research and check the spelling in your message, then why would I take your ideas seriously at all? So maybe you do have a great proof, but if you want to get people to take you seriously, you need to approach what you're doing with the seriousness it deserves. All right. What's your favorite piece of content you have created over the years? My all-time favorite is the video, The Story of Your Enslavement. Well, that is my Bohemian Rhapsody. And it is always, of course, interesting. You see sort of bands like Queen continue from Bohemian Rhapsody to absolute trash like Delilah, which was a song Freddie Mercury wrote about his cat, which is really bad. Having all the backup singers screech meow in falsetto is not even close to high art. So, it's quite tragic. Do I go out here? Sorry, I lost my wind guard on the microphone here. Some of it fell off. And trying to find a tiny wind guard in the woods is not a productive use of human time. So I just wanted to mention that. I saw a slight distraction. So I got to tell you guys, I have faults, of course, I have faults. And one of them is perhaps an overlove of my own work. And so my favorite piece of content is always the one I'm creating in the moment. My favorite piece of content is what I am doing right now. Right now. And of course, I mean, I love the stuff that I've done in the past. I think my novels are great. I think that my documentaries are good. And I do like, of course, some of the stuff I used to be able to put together with clips. Now, I'm trying a UPB movie. It's about half an hour long, which has AI clips to illustrate the points. And it is not being met with great positivity, which is fine. I mean, obviously, I'm trying things, seeing if they work. I'm not sure if I will continue or abandon that project or wait until AI tools become a little bit better. I'm still trying to figure that out. So honestly, if you're singing a concert, like if you're a singer or a musician and you're doing a concert, then what you're doing is, hopefully, you're not thinking, and I know this is not what you're suggesting, I'm telling you my mindset, right? If you're a musician and you are creating, you're doing your music, you're performing in the moment, then your favorite performance has to be the one you're doing right now. Because you can't give a good performance if you are thinking about, wow, you know, like 10 years ago, man, did I give a really good performance. You can't really. I mean, where does Queen go after Live Aid, right? They have to say, well, the performance I'm giving right now is the best performance. So the answers that I'm giving right now is my favorite content. And tomorrow, when I put answers out about something else or do another show or have another call in, that will be my favorite content. My favorite content is always what I'm producing in the moment, if that helps. Excuse me. Somebody says, as part owner of a research and development company, is there an ethical consideration in funding? I find some of the games played to be distasteful. But if I find my footing and get things off the ground, I have to play the game. I found a political angle I'm going to exploit. Yeah, I mean, I used to get these complaints from people. You know, hey, man, you're a, I guess I was a minarchist, like a small government guy. And you do some work with people who work with the government. You do some work with the government itself. And I frankly, I could not care less about those objections. I just want to be really frank about that. I could not even remotely, in my wildest dreams, care less about these sorts of objections. I did not create the system. I am trying to change the system for the better. Oh, here's a little branch. Go around or go under? Let's go around. Look at that, low branch. So I'm not responsible for the system. I did not create the system. Most of the catastrophes that occur within the system were put in place before I was even born. In 1965, welfare state, old age pensions, all go back to the 60s and 30s. So I don't feel any good or bad about working within a system in order to try to fix it, given that I didn't create the system and I'm not at all responsible for the negatives of the system. Were some forms of the internet developed by the government? Yeah. Does that mean I shouldn't use the internet? You know, I just find, no, this is not you, this is just people as a whole. I just find this, you know, well, moral purity is impossible in a stained system. And it's like, yeah. So my goal is the direction, not where you are. If you wake up in an awful and excrement-filled sewer, then your goal should be to get out of the sewer, not to say how repulsive it is to be in the sewer. I mean, of course, it's repulsive, but you shouldn't focus on that. So with regards to the system, the money's going to be taxed, the money's going to be printed, the money's going to be given away. Either you take it or your enemies take it. So either you take it to do something good in the world or bad people take it to fund doing bad things in the world. You not taking the money does not mean it goes back to the taxpayers. I mean, I remember many years ago, I was in a pretty corrupt business situation, and I had taken a monitor offsite to do some R&D, which was all fine. I didn't take it like it was. And then I parted ways in a pretty negative context in the business situation, and I kept the monitor, and I remember one of my friends saying, oh yeah, but you're really into property rights, you never gave that monitor back. I'm like, bro, this is like 0.00001% of what they unjustly took from me. The idea that, like, why don't you go nag them about all the things they did wrong rather than nagging me for hanging on to something like this, which is, like, not of value. So, I mean, compared to what was taken. So, yeah, it's, go and get the money and do good things with it and all of that. I mean, don't trouble yourself. Don't bother yourself. Now, this doesn't mean that you would necessarily want to join forces with the government in its worst manifestations, for sure. I mean, I get that. But as far as being concerned about, I mean, if this is taxpayer money, as far as being concerned about it, I mean, it's one thing where if you don't take the money then goes back to people, but it doesn't, right? If you've ever worked in the government, and I did very briefly, but if you ever worked in the government, actually, I worked with the government a number of times. I worked in the government, I think once. Then you know that the government will spend its money no matter what, because if they don't spend their money, they get less money in the next round of funding, right? So if they've got a $1 billion budget and they only spend $900 million, their concern is that they'll only get $900 million in the next budget round. So they will go and spend $100 million just to top up their budget. And in a way, they don't even really care what it's on. So, I mean, that money is going out to the void, and you might as well get your money and use it to raise your family and do good with all of that. And it's perfectly legal. You're being taxed to pay for it anyway. There's nothing wrong with getting some of your tax money back and all of that. And, you know, you work to improve the system. You work to improve society as a whole. And I don't really care. I mean, obviously, you don't want to do evil things directly. I get all of that. Don't go rob gas stations or whatever it is, right? But working legally within the system to gain resources to do good and to raise peacefully parented children, go to it. I give you a papal blessing if that meant anything in this context. All right, so what are the root causes of a terror of humiliation or embarrassment? Well, there's two. So British people are famously shy of embarrassment. There's a great speech from John Cleese in A Fish Called Wanda about this, you know, like, oh, we live in terror. You know, you ask someone, how's your wife? And you find out that she died, you know, last month, and you're just crushed with embarrassment and horror and so on. And the reason for that is quite simple, that England spent a number of centuries killing off people who were disapproved of socially. Now, of course, a lot of these were thieves, rapists, murderers, and so on, right? So England spent hundreds and hundreds of years killing off people, or economically or genetically disabling them, right? Put them in prison for the rest of their lives or send them to Australia where they can breed with kangaroos or something. I'm not a biologist, but something like that. So in England, those who did not fear social disapproval died, or died off. Their genes died off. So the only genes that remained were those that were very concerned and frightened of social disapproval, because social disapproval meant genetic death. And so it is a multi-hundred year program of ensuring that only those who care the most about social disapproval get to survive, which is why you end up with an internally policed high trust society. And that process has gone on. In other cultures, they tend to promote the most aggressive or violent. And I mean, I'm sure you know about the fox experiment by the Russian breeder. He took foxes, divided them into two groups, the most and least aggressive. And he had the least aggressive breed with the least aggressive and the most aggressive breed with the most aggressive. And within a very short amount of time, a couple of generations, he ended up with tame foxes and crazy aggressive pit bull style foxes, right? It's not, so if you're sort of from Northwestern Europe in particular, then the reason why you're afraid of humiliation and embarrassment is because your ancestors survived by having a heavy focus on being approved of socially. And because of that, you exist. And therefore, you have a very heightened genetic response to humiliation and embarrassment and social disapproval. So women, of course, would not want to breed with men in England when this whole process was going on. Women would not want to breed with men who did not care about social cues, because those men would be more likely to run afoul of society and get killed, imprisoned, or exiled. And, you know, this is probably more true of the upper classes to a large degree, but it's fairly true as a whole. So that's one reason. And this is why a lot of people have a great fear of public speaking, because public speaking was generally your last-ditch effort to save your life when society turned on you and you were accused of something terrible, and then you were allowed to speak in your own defense. Well, you didn't want to end up in that kind of situation at all, right? Because it meant things were going very badly for you. So because of that, we don't like public speaking. We want to avoid situations of public speaking, because public speaking generally occurred after being called out for some horrible crime that would lead to genetic death in one way, form, or another. Quite ghoul-enabled. Right, see, this is me without without skin softening. So, all right. Hey, you know what? Pushing 60, I'm good with it. I'm good with it. Aging is great. I love being in a time of life where all my major decisions have been made. I love it. I know how many kids I'm going to have. I know who I'm going to spend the rest of my life with, which is my wife. I know what I'm going to be doing with my life, which is wandering the woods, crying my barbaric yorps to the rooftops of the world in echoing chimes of infinite reason, and all of those decisions. You know, I haven't had those in years, but you ever have those dreams where you forget your exam, or you have an exam that you're not ready for? I mean, that's all in the past for me. I know exactly what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life and who I'm going to be doing it with. It's a beautiful place to be. A lovely, lovely place to be. So, aging is beautiful. Now, of course, I'm still only 59.8, so the worst is yet to come, but this is a sweet spot of happiness, contentment, security, beauty, and thank you for all of that. In the family, right, so families had to raise children when social disapproval meant genetic death. Then there was no point having children unless you got them to obey social rules. And it didn't really matter what the content of those social rules was. You had to obey the social rules. That was just a fact. So parents had to inflict ostracism or threats of ostracism. Keep walking through spider webs. Hopefully nothing's going to bite my jugular. Let's find out, shall we? Maybe this is going to be found footage down the road. But parents had to inflict the threat of ostracism on their children. Otherwise, those children would grow up, break social rules, and it would be genetic death. And really, what's the point of having children if they themselves are not going to have children? Oh, how pretty, right? Lovely little spot. So your parents have to shame and bully you. And that's part of, it's all part of growing up and being British. I remember being at a friend's place and he was playing a video game. His parents were in the room. He was playing a video game and he pulled off this amazing move. And I quoted from Monty Python's Life of Brian, A guy steps off a bridge and is caught by space aliens and goes all over the universe, comes back, crashes, and walks away from the crash. And a passerby says, "Ooh, you jammy bastard," which means you lucky guy. And I thought it was a pretty funny line. And I was like maybe 12 or 13. And I said, when this guy pulled off this amazing move on a video game, I said, "Oh, you jammy bastard," quoting the movie. And of course, my brother kicked me hard in a subterranean fashion and gave me a glare of how could you possibly say something like this. Now, of course, he had quoted this line countless times, but it was bad, you see, it was bad. Funny things I remember from almost 50 years ago. And that is like disapproved of. I remember lining up. I was lining up to get tickets to a show. I thought it was in the lineup. Turns out that there was just a gap for people to get through. And there was this stodgy British couple behind me who said, when I got into line and apparently I'd cut in front of them, he said, "Well, that's a bit much. Well, that's a bit much." There's contempt and scorn and all this sort of stuff. It's very big, of course, in Japanese culture as well. In Japan, sometimes people will have operations so that they can't blush anymore because they don't want it to give themselves away in negotiations. I'm literally Frodo with Shelob at the moment. I'm so covered in spider webs. Sorry, spiders. I know you worked hard, but your spangly butt juice is now my lively cocoon. I love the way my language brain works. Where do these sentences come from? I don't know, but they're fun. All right. It's also personal. But yeah, it's a survival mechanism. It's a survival mechanism. All right. The difference between categories of emergent properties and relationships/association seems to be a major root of profound problems between people and ideas. Take, for example, trees, emergent property versus a forest, association, or relationship. What do you think? It is tough. Yeah, it is tough for people to say that trees exist and forests don't. Now, of course, I understand that when we say trees exist and forests don't, well, the tree is a label for something as well. Frankly, the only thing that exists are atoms and energy. The only things that exist are atoms and energy. So when it comes to a tree, right? We got some around here, right? Here's our forest. Here's our individual trees. The forest doesn't exist because it's not an aggregation of atoms. You could say that the roots kind of get entangled and so on, but it's still discrete entities. The trees exist. It's our label for the aggregation of matter and energy, the trunk, the cellulose, the chlorophyll, the leaves, the branches, blah, 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 the bark. So the label tree is actually for something that you can touch, right? So here I am. I touch the tree. I cannot pass through the tree. However, I can pass through the forest, he said with his light up chin. So I can pass through the forest. I cannot pass through the tree. The tree is tightly packed. Matter and energy, the forest is an abstraction to describe this here aggregation of trees. So yeah, people do have a tough time with concepts don't exist. And that's because people live in concepts. They live in gods, they live in countries. They live in collectivizations of just about every kind. And because people live in concepts, they have a very tough time saying that concepts don't exist. It would be like, the equivalent would be if somebody, like here I am walking through the woods, right? And if somebody were able to prove to me that these woods that I am walking through, is my eye line, eye level. The woods that I'm walking through are just a simulation. It's not real. I'm in some sort of holodeck or some sort of matrix-style simulation or something like that, right? So if somebody were to prove that to me, it would dissolve my sense of reality and I would feel insane. That which I think exists, right? Like if I were to, you know, here's my hand, here's the tree, right? If I were to try and put my hand through the tree, right? I'll never be able to put my hand through the tree. It will never happen. However, if somebody were to say to me, if you don't believe in the tree, you can pass your hand through it. If I were to turn the tree from a thing, an object, to a concept, I can walk through the concept of a forest. There's nothing barring me. Even a tightly packed forest, I can cut my way through. I certainly have in the past. So if somebody were to say to me, but if you don't believe in the tree, you can put your hand through it. That would blow my gourd, man. And that would absolutely shatter my sense of empirical reality. It would be the equivalent. It would be the equivalent to me of losing my mind. Because when you lose your mind, you see things that aren't there and you don't see things that aren't there. You live in a hallucination. So if somebody were to prove to me that empirical reality was a hallucination and that there were no properties outside of the mind that could not be changed by the mind, like a video game, right? You can make people fly, you can make people burrow, and so on, right? So if someone were to approve to me that I could walk through a tree if I disbelieved in it, that would have me feel insane. Because then the great danger would be that if I, you know, the clipping problem, you ever have this where you fall through a map in a video game, you look up and you see the map sort of flying away up. So if I could walk through a tree, or my hand could shimmer through a tree, if I didn't believe in the tree, then the great danger would be that I would stop believing in the ground. I would fall through the ground forever. I don't know what that would be, but I would be lost to the world. My genes would be lost to reproduction, etc., etc., etc. So people live in cloud castles, and they don't like to find out that these cloud castles aren't real, in the same way that you don't want to wake up and realize that your entire life has been a psychotic delusion. See, this is why I love what I'm doing in the moment, because this is fantastic stuff I'm explaining. So people live in concepts. They are patriotic to their countries. Countries don't exist. You can walk through a country, right? They cheer on their sports teams. Their sports teams. The people exist, but loyalty to the sports team is just a accidental geographic proximity. Go Lakers! So they worship gods. Gods do not exist. They worship saints. They worship popes, as if the popes have a magical connection to the ultimate AI of God, which they don't, of course. So people live. And also they say, you do for family. You do for family. My family is the best. Everything is for the family. Honor thy mother and thy father. Well, mother and father are concepts. We don't honor concepts. We honor individuals. We don't honor people for being mothers or fathers. We honor people for their virtues, which is, of course, it overlaps. There are mothers and fathers who are very virtuous. There are people who aren't mothers or fathers who are stone evil. So there is some overlap, but it's not one-to-one. So bad people want you to worship concepts because then they don't have to actually be good, right? So somebody who's a bad entrepreneur will say, the government should give money to entrepreneurs because that's a category. But some entrepreneurs are very bad. Most are not great because most businesses fail. So people want to create concepts, abstractions, and then have you worship those abstractions. And then they inhabit those abstractions and they get the splash damage worship from inhabiting those abstractions. So, you know, teachers and bosses and parents will say things like, don't be disrespectful. You owe me respect. It's like, no, I don't. I owe you nothing but justice. I owe you justice. If you do actions worthy of respect, I owe you respect. if you do actions worthy of contempt, I owe you contempt. And I always pay my bills, both credits and debits. So people will say, well, I'm a teacher. You should respect me because of the category teacher. And it's like, nope. Nope. No, I won't do that. I will never do that. I will never do that. And so it's very tough for people who live their entire lives in concepts, in abstractions, and things that don't exist and are just used to manipulate them. If you say those things don't exist, they feel like they're losing their minds. And in a way, they are. They're losing their mindlessness. They are waking up to NPCs. Their NPC-dom, which is very tough. All right, gosh, it's already been 40 minutes. Why do people constantly join team-based sports, soccer, basketball, hockey, video games, just to be selfish? Even bashing or insulting teammates when losing instead of being uplifting and inspiring are counter by being positive. Hands getting a little tired here. Let me just raise this up a little so I don't have to raise my arm quite so much. The mechanics of philosophy are essential. I like team-based sports. I mean, I'm just telling you whether that's a preference or a prejudice remains to be seen. But yeah, I like team-based sports myself. And let's try this way. Team-based sports is how we evolved. So when you look at people's makeup, you don't look at them as if we have no genetic history or filtering history. So why do sports exist? Sports exist to train people for war. And not just the people who are playing the sports, but everyone else. You're supposed to cheer as magically, universally good the people who you are in physical proximity to, right? My tribe's warriors are magnificent, wonderful, great, and virtuous, and the other tribe's warriors are terrible and evil and wretched and malevolent and so on, right? Sorry. Hoisting around here. It's like flying through. Just a floating leaf. Oh, and a butterfly. Baba yai, as my daughter used to say. So sports is training for hunting and war. Right, we understand all of that, right? So why do people, in men in particular, but often it happens, why do people join teams? Because we evolved with teams, and the genes that survived were those who mindlessly, and I don't say that as an insult, it's a necessary thing, the people who survived were those who mindlessly cheered on their own team rather than, or, you know, if things are going badly, then you betray and switch to the other team. Women do this a lot, which is why women, when they feel that their men are losing, which is currently the case in the West, women as a whole start to shift their sympathies towards the invaders so that they will survive the decimation of their own males and be able to reproduce with the invaders, right? So women have to switch loyalties on a dime, or, of course, to put it my usual other way, women who refuse to switch loyalties did not survive. Their genes did not survive. So women are loyal to power because women are subject to power through almost all of human evolution. So, yeah, why do people now? Why do men trash talk each other? Well, there's pretty solid studies out there that show that men who trash talk other men are actually better friends. Like, they'll do more things for you. They'll sacrifice more things for you. They'll be nicer for you. They'll go out on a limb for you, help you move, whatever, right? So the reason why men trash talk each other in sports is because in hunting and war, if you're not in a raw meritocracy, you're going to lose, right? So in hunting, if you have three spears, you have to give your spears to the very best spear thrower. Otherwise, your tribe is going to starve to death and you're all going to die. I'm not kidding about this, right? Meritocracy is life, which is why any attack upon meritocracy is an attack upon the survival of the civilization itself, which is why I've railed against these things for many, many years. So the reason why men trash talk each other is ego or vanity is the opposite of meritocracy. So if John Deacon, who was not a singer, said, Freddie Mercury, you should play the bass and I'll be the singer. Well, Freddie Mercury was a great singer and performer, and so Freddie Mercury should do it for the best of the band, right? So, obviously, John Deacon had to put his ego aside and do what was best for the band. Take a silly example, right? So the reason why men trash talk each other is to make sure that vanity does not grow to the point that it overwhelms meritocracy and destroys the tribe. So that's why everybody wants to be the Ulysses, everybody wants to be the head, the chieftain, everybody wants to be in charge, everybody wants to be the alpha and so on. But the only way that the tribe can survive is if only the best person gets the resources. And capitalism is just an extension of that. So, yeah, you have to trash talk to make sure that people don't get angry. It's the old thing, like, in soccer or in, volleyball. So in volleyball, we've all gone through this process. If you've ever played volleyball, it's three bumps or hand flicks on each side. So the ball goes over, you get one, two, three, and then on the third one, it has to go back over. So what you generally do is you will do a set. You'll set it up. So what you'll do is send it high, close to the net, so that somebody can spike it. So everybody goes through this process, and what they do is they say to themselves, I'm going to try and set this person up with a good spike, right? And that's what everybody says. And we try this, right? And if the person fumbles the ball repeatedly, then everybody who wants a decent game, assuming you're not just practicing, says, okay, well, I'm not going to send the ball to this person anymore because I'm just losing the point. So instead of setting it up, one, two, three, I'm just going to send it back over the net. It's the same thing with soccer, of course. You're going down towards the enemy goal or the opposing team's goal, and you're going to pass the ball or not. If you pass the ball, that's good because people are swarming you. You pass the ball, somebody else can have a clear shot. And if you pass the ball and the other person screws it up, right, they kick badly, they kick wrong, they trip, they fall, they give it to the other team or whatever. I mean, you'll maybe try it once or twice more to see if it was just a bad accident or coincidence, but at some point, what you're going to do is you're going to stop passing the ball to that guy. And then what happens? Well, the guy keeps yelling, I'm open, I'm open. And then you don't pass to him because he sucks. And he's going to lose the ball to the opposing team. So what do? Well, you just charge down and try and score the goal yourself. And then he gets angry and he says, I mean, I was open, why aren't you passing to me? And then there's conflict, right? And so what's the answer? Well, the answer is, every time I pass it to you, you fumble. You need to get better at the game if you want to get passed to. Because if you're bad at the game, same thing in basketball, right? You pass the ball, somebody drops it, fumbles it, gives it to the opposing team. So you might as well try for the three-pointer and so on, right? So men have to trash talk each other to make sure that vanity doesn't grow to the point where there's an inefficient allocation of resources which causes your tribe to starve or everyone to get killed in a war. So if you only have three swords and 20 guys, you give the three swords to the biggest, strongest, fastest, best swordsman. Or to put it another way, as usual, those tribes that chose to let vanity, entitlement, and demand allocate resources, and they'd give the spear or the sword to the person who complained the most, those people lost the battles, got wiped out. Those people did not hunt effectively and got wiped out. So that's why. All right. Let's do one more. Thank you for your patience. I hope you like this format. For me, it's nice being out in the woods. So, 23-year-old male struggling with trust issues, attachment issues, and life direction after heartbreak 8 months ago. How to correctly approach self-reflection and orienting yourself in life without getting too stuck in your head or mentally masturbating. So, sorry about your heartbreak. heartbreak, generally managed or wisely managed, if you manage heartbreak wisely, it turns into the best thing ever. So, of course, I dated before I got married. My wife didn't, of course. I rescued her from the nunnery. But I dated before I got married. And, of course, when a relationship didn't work out, I thought it was a bad thing. However, I love being married to my wife so much that I look at every single relationship that didn't work out in the past as a glorious godsend that opened the way up to the magnificent cathedral of girly world that I live in now. So it's a good thing. In business, I often felt that I was putting in more effort than other people, and I was somewhat exploited, and most of those business relationships didn't work out. But now I get to freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Come on, this is great stuff. Can't get this anywhere else, and you never will be able to get this anywhere else. It is a singular conversation that we're having here. But all the business relationships that didn't work out put me on the path to doing what I'm doing now. If I had been more happy in business, I would have been less likely to do the world a solid and talk philosophy instead of write code and manage people and do sales and negotiate contracts and all the stuff that I was doing in the business world. Oh, how pretty. What a lovely day. It's actually crazy hot up here at the moment, but not so bad in the shade. And I can't even tell you how much bug spray I have on. Absolutely necessary. I couldn't be out here otherwise. But it's all natural. So it's made with whale semen, sperm whale semen. So it actually lowers my testosterone. But inside joke. So everything that seems negative in your life, assuming that you apply yourself consistency to honesty, integrity, and virtue, everything that is negative in your life becomes a positive if you seek moral improvement. So why don't relationships work out? It's either because you lied to her, she lied to you, or you lied to yourself. Now, maybe she lied to herself, but she's not here, so I can't really judge that. So why don't relationships work out? Because you lied to yourself. Usually the most common thing is you find someone and you've got the hots for her, right? She's a smoke show. And she has some particular attribute you find attractive. And then you lie to her, to yourself, about how virtuous she is and what a nice person she is and how smart she is and so on, right? I kind of been alone in that. I know I'm not. So it's the R-selected versus K-selected. R-selected goes for physical attributes. K-selected goes for moral qualities, right? R-selected is for your nuts. You'll take nuts for your nuts. K-selected is for your children. R-selected means you want someone who's hot in bed and you find sexy. And K-selected is you want someone who's going to be a good mother for your children. And, you know, these are overlapping, blah, 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 right? I was sort of aware that I don't want people to think, oh my God, he doesn't find his wife sexy. I really do. But it's the qualities of character that make it last. So generally, what happens is people lie to themselves and they say, this woman that I find sexy has all these qualities of character, right? And so you get into relationships for reasons of lust, and then you lie to yourself about the qualities of character that the woman possesses. And then eventually, your lust wears out, and the negative, the bad qualities of her character remain. Right? You know that old saying, like, no matter how hot the woman is, there's someone in the world who's tired of sleeping with her. I don't think it's put quite that way, but you know what I mean. So why did you end up in a bad relationship? Because you lied to yourself. And I say this with sympathy, and it's not like I've never done it, so, you know, I say this with all humility. But yeah, you lied to yourself. And also, either you had people in your life who didn't give you good advice, right? Oh, that's quite an overgrown path here. Either you had people in your life who didn't give you good advice, which means that you need to improve the quality of people in your life, or you had people in your life who gave you good advice and you didn't listen to it. And why wouldn't you listen to good advice? Well, for reasons of lust. So it's a shame and it's tough. And I I don't mean to not sympathize with your heartbreak, but it's really just a ball break. That's all it is. You ran out of lust, and in your post-nut clarity, you saw the person, the woman, as she actually was, and you found that you did not like her in particular, or maybe the reverse happened. But the way to solve that, the way to deal with that, is to continually... I feel like I'm going into the void here. The way to solve that, or to fix that, is to continuously work upon moral self-improvement. Aim to be more direct, more honest, don't lie to yourself. If you're turned on by a woman, which is fine, it's healthy, there's nothing wrong with it, but not at the expense of qualities of character, but if you find yourself turned on by a woman, then you have to really look for the red flags that tell you whether she is a good person or not. In other words, instead of looking at her through the distortionary matrix lens of infinite hormones and the short-term reproductive strategy of mere physical characteristics are selected, what you need to do is look at a woman that you're attracted to through the lens of your child. And instead of thinking how great it would be to have a naughty weekend away, which is fine, look at how is my child going to perceive this woman when the child is ill and the woman has to go and take care of this baby or toddler for the third or fourth time at night, right? Instead of looking at the woman from the standpoint of your bed, you have to look at the woman from the standpoint of your child's bed. Let's say the baby is colicky. Let's say the baby having other kinds of digestive problems, and the baby has been crying for 2 days straight. Is the woman going to be impatient and angry and so on? Or is the woman going to dissolve in sympathy at how difficult it is for the child? And I'm not saying never have any impatience or whatever. I mean, obviously, a baby crying is designed to be a negative stimulus so that you can fix whatever problem or hope to. But how is the woman going to be with a baby who cries a lot? Is she going to move heaven and earth to make that baby happy and comfortable and try and figure out the solution in a peaceful and patient manner? Well, that's good then, right? But instead of looking down at your woman in a bed, look up at your woman from your child's bed and try to determine how good or bad a mother she's going to be. And again, just to reiterate the obvious, this is not to say that sexual lust is bad, that's fine. It's great. I mean, you've got to have some lust. Otherwise, you're not going to have the kids, really. But the sadness that you're feeling is the sadness deep down of disappointment that you are lying to yourself. Or, of course, the other way that we lie to ourselves is that the woman we're attracted to does something negative or bad or wrong, kind of horrible or selfish or thoughtless or whatever it is. And maybe she doesn't apologize or whatever. And what do we say? We say, ah, that's a one-time thing. I mean, she was in a bad mood. She'd had a difficult day. You know, she's got PMS or, you know, we sort of make up these excuses. And why do we make up these excuses? Because we want to continue to have sexual access. So we're not sad at the breakup. We are depressed at our ability to lie to ourselves. And if you understand that and you say, well, look, moving forward, I'm really going to work hard to tell the truth about my relationships, to not make stuff up, to not lie, to not sugarcoat, to not make excuses, to not gaslight myself about quality that does not appear to be manifesting. You shall not pass. Actually, I think I will. So, a little bridge here for those who are just listening. I hope you have a wonderful week. And sorry to those who watched my Quake show last night. I didn't realize that the bit rate was too low, which is why the graphics weren't great, but I think I have fixed that now. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. I'll get to the rest of the questions later. Thank you so much, my friends. Have yourself a wonderful, wonderful day. I really do appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about virtues and values and truth and philosophy. freedomain.com/donate. Bye.